I'm Robert Gottliebson, a commentator in Eureka Report, and it's my great pleasure to be here today to replace Alan Kohler. And when Alan asked me to do this, he asked me for people to talk to, and first on the list was Ronaldo Mota. And the reason for that is that what he is attempting to do is to reform the ANZ and the NAB investment businesses in a way they couldn't do. And so we're going to talk about that and what he's actually doing. And Ronaldo, I want to start by asking you, what's your view about the total advice business, which is at the core of these banking operations? How do you see advice in Australia going forward?
Thanks, Robert. It's great to be here with you today. Look, I think when it comes to the topic of advice, it is an industry, if you like, that has been maligned over recent times. But if you look back through a longer time history, it's got a really strong track record of helping Australians through their entire lives. Now, the industry has changed and the industry models have changed and will continue to change. But in terms of the relevance of advice, I don't think it's ever been more apparent than it is in these COVID times. And we've seen that through our business where the demand for advice has gone up. People are reaching out more to understand what they can do, to try and take control of their affairs. And I think there's a real opportunity for organisations like ourselves, including the ANZ business and the MLC business we've acquired, to take a really leadership role in helping people navigate through their financial affairs, but be they in their 30s, 40s, or be they reaching retirement.
In advice, though, I think you start with the actual family situation rather than the investment advice. Is that right?
Absolutely. So we've done a lot of research into the value of advice, and the real value of advice for Australians is in that having someone to coach them, to help them understand their own personal affairs. So well before we start talking about where to put your money and where to invest it, it starts with understanding your own personal circumstances, you know, your kids, your parents, whether you've got blended families, what your aspirations for life are, because that will actually start to shed a really clear picture on what are those financial obligations going forward. Once we understand your financial obligations or areas of your life you're looking to protect, for example, you know, do you have kids and you're looking to use life insurance to protect their welfare? Once we understand your personal affairs, we can then start to understand, well, what sort of asset base do you need to match those liabilities? What sort of financial backing and financial wealth do you need to help you navigate through your life? Because it's not money for money's sake. The financial planning is about making sure that you have the money and the assets you need to meet the lifestyle that you would like to live, or in some cases, to adjust your lifestyle to make sure that you can live comfortably and confidently.
So in a COVID situation, are your advisors actually talking about the impact of COVID on the actual family itself and its relationships?
Absolutely, and particularly so in small businesses. So where the small businesses are seeking financial advice to understand how should they navigate through this period of uncertainty, not knowing whether they can open the doors, not knowing whether they're going to have any cash flow, understanding whether, you know, how do they leverage off the benefits from the government, be it JobKeeper, how do they best manage whatever savings they may have, how do they best manage that to navigate through some of these uncertainties at a small business level. At the individual level, it's a quite a similar dynamic in understanding, well, if we go through a protracted period where people might have uncertainty to employment, then, okay, well, what's the backup plan? How do we help manage our cash flow to make sure we can stretch it a little bit further, or we can give ourselves a little bit more confidence around getting through the next 3 months or 6 months comfortably? Because ultimately, financial planning is about giving people confidence in their financial affairs. It's not about making people wealthy. For some it is. For some it's about aspiring to wealth. But for many, it's about having confidence in knowing what they can and can't do.
We'll talk about MLC later. Let's start with the ANZ. Now, how many advisors from the ANZ roughly did you acquire?
We acquired it. It was circa 300 to 400 from the ANZ business that came across. And these are largely self-employed advisors. So they're advisors who own their own financial planning business, but they partner with IOOF or with ANZ for licensing services. So for all the compliance, all the research, the investment research, and the management of their business, they partner with us to help them run their businesses and deliver the financial advice to their clients.
But you're wanting them to advise in a totally different way in the way you described before.
Yep.
How on earth did you, A, convince them to do that, and B, train them to do that?
Look, it's a great question. I think, like any other industry, Robert, the financial advice industry is going through quite a lot of change. There's technology that exists today that didn't exist 4 or 5 years ago. There are new competitors. So I think, like any business, the financial advisor itself needs to adapt to the environment. We commenced a process and we established what we call the Advice Academy, which was partly a research center and a training division to help us understand where is the value of advice. And that's resulted in a few white papers and a few research papers, the last one of which we called The True Value of Advice. And what that really highlighted to us is that for Australians who engage with financial advisors, the true value that they get from that is actually that sense of comfort, that sense of having a coach to help them along the way, much more so than where is the money invested. So this for us was really one of those aha moments. The value for an advisor in their relationships has much more to do with their personal engagement, the coaching, understanding the clients and their families, than it is trying to pick the next fund manager that's going to, you know, deliver the outstanding performance. So now managing investments is part of the equation, but clients put far more weight on their relationships. When we started engaging with advisors and explaining this to them, it was a bit of an aha moment to them as well, that they could focus on the things they really love to do, which is talking to clients. And actually, they should be outsourcing much of the portfolio construction and investment pieces to global fund managers that do this every day of the week. So for them, it was really about focusing in on what they're truly good at, which is understanding clients and partnering with other experts in the field for the management of money and management of investments.
And how did they get on? They've not been doing this. How did the ANZ advisors, how much progress have they made? Have they learned how to do it, and how's it working?
Yeah, look, it's not flicking a switch. So it's something, it's like anything. The more you practice it, the better you get at it. And I think certainly for us, with having them as part of our business for the last couple of years, we have seen a real progression for many of those businesses. They're really progressing to what we call goals-based advising, and we're supporting them through that with new technologies. So we're giving them the right technologies to help them have those conversations with their clients. It's a different sort of conversation for their clients, but that's certainly something that I think many of our advisors are really gravitating towards.
So you mentioned in your report that you expected this to break even in the current financial year. So what's the financial impact of this? How does the ANZ advisor charge? Why hasn't it broken even earlier? What are the factors in that?
Yes, so one of the changes for the industry as a whole, and I referred to a bit earlier the fact that the industry structure is changing and that the nature of these businesses are changing. So, for example, there is a real desire to ensure that financial advisors' only business model, the only revenue they earn, is from the client. So they're not beholden to anyone else. They're not beholden to product manufacturers. They're not beholden to fund managers. They have a business that is truly centered around the client. In the past, that's not where the industry has been. In the past, as a financial advisor, there may be income streams or commissions that come from product manufacturers and fund managers that put them potentially in a position of conflict. So I think it's great that we're moving forward. Now, that being said, I think for many of the advice businesses we've acquired, that means that they were operating at a loss and being subsidised by the product part of the business, if that makes sense. So what we've made a very clear sense that as for us to be truly a client-centred organisation that is only there to serve our clients, we need to make sure the business is sustainable in its own right. So for us, that means that we've had to be very conscious about where our costs go. We've invested in technology to make it more efficient, and really with a view of making sure that the advice business standalone is break-even, there's no subsidies to anyone else, and that we're really supporting the financial advisors in looking after their clients.
How do they charge their clients? On a per hour basis? Or
no, so it differs. So typically it'll be either a per annum basis or a sort of a set time via invoice, or some advisor will charge as a percentage of the assets that they're advising on. Now, in one way or the other, typically the numbers you come out at are quite similar, whether it's a percentage of assets or whether it's a sort of an annual subscription model. It's typically, you know, it will start from around $3,000 and up from there. That fee model, so what the clients charge as part of this transition to goals-based advice hasn't really changed. The fee model and the kind of fees that the clients are charging tend to be quite similar. But I would say there's a predominance now to move more towards a fixed fee arrangement. So they'll charge a fee for a 12-month period, for example, and probably less reliance on a percentage of assets.
But roughly, it amounts to about $3,000 a year.
Look, I'd say 3,000. So it starts at about 3,000. I think the cost of delivering advice is probably around. It's not far from $3,000. So for an ongoing advice relationship, you'd be looking to be charged 3,000 or more, depending on the complexity of the arrangements. Obviously, so if you've got a blended family with kids in other arrangements, etc., obviously it gets more complex. It gets more costly. But the starting point would be around 3,000.
Okay, and that's each year?
Each year, yeah.
And you're finding that people are quite happy to pay that? See, previously they didn't know. The fees were probably the same. Or in fact, they were greater. But they came out of the box.
Yeah, look, so again, in the research we've done, it shows that the clients who are in these relationships firstly have a very, very clear sense of what they're paying, which is important. So that they know what they're paying and they see value in what they're paying. And importantly, when we did some research around the levels of financial well-being or peace of mind generally in clients that have an advisor and clients that aren't in an advice relationship. So we compared the two. And interestingly, it was to see that there was a significant improvement in peace of mind and overall well-being with clients that have a financial advisor. So they know what they're paying, they see value in what they're paying, and they feel better about themselves as a result of being in that relationship.
So we come to MLC, and this is a very proud company that ran separately from the NAB and all the stuff we know. How many advisors said, I'll sign up with you? How did you get on?
So we had 405 advisors that joined us, and we're
out
really
of?
That was about 80%. So there might have been around 500, and so 80% of those that we targeted joined us. So 405, some of which are employed under our advice business, under MLC Advice, others which are self-employed, so they run their own business and, again, rely on us for those support services. Really, really pleased that they've chosen to join and it was their choice. And so far it's been great to get to know those advisors, understand the passion with which they have for their clients, for helping their clients live better lives. So they're very passionate, like the rest of our advisors. And I think we now find ourselves with one of the largest advice businesses in the country and really an ambition to help more people get access to advice.
So how long will it take for you to train the MLC people? And you've got, of course, the ANZ experience to help you in determining that.
Yeah, look, it's I'd say that some of the MLC advisors were already on their journey with respect to goals-based advice and really centering in on the elements of advice that matter most to their clients, which is that really personalized experience. So many of them were already on that journey. So we will just look to complement that, bringing some of our technologies that we've built and bringing them that to them to help them hopefully have a richer experience, one that's more engaging with clients rather than the traditional paper-based experience. But it's pleasing to see that they're already on that journey. So it's not like we're starting from scratch.
To some extent, it's probably made easier by the new technologies because you don't have to keep calling in on people's houses and all the problems that you have. Is that right?
Absolutely. So I think not only have we invested in technologies, I think the COVID environment's created some new ways of working. So I know with my own personal planner that I'm more likely to have a meeting on Zoom these days than I would go to his office. So, and many of clients.
So you've got one, have you?
I do have a planner.
Have you got an advisor?
I do have it.
Is he an IWRF one or do you go elsewhere?
Well, he has an association with IWRF. He does have an association with the group, but he shall remain nameless. It's an important part of making sure that I hold myself to account. I'm making sure that I've got the right behaviours and I'm thinking broadly around my own personal circumstances and for the whole family.
Okay. Now, you've got two systems System Evolve 1 and System Evolve 2. Explain to me what these systems are and just how important they are in the whole operation.
Yeah, so with as a diversified business, we have different parts to our business. One is the advice business. We also offer superannuation products and what we call investment platforms. So these are technologies that help advisors construct portfolios. Because we've acquired some businesses, we've currently got two different operating environments, two different platforms or technologies, and we're merging them into one. So we're merging the older technology into the newer technology. That will allow us to provide all our clients with a much better experience, a much more contemporary offer, and allow us to do so more cost effectively. So part of this transition, we'll see some of the clients get lower fees, which again is a great way to help make sure that our clients are actually accumulating more wealth and paying less in fees.
And so the Evolve 2, when does that all happen?
So the last transition occurs in December of this year. So before the end of the year, we'll move onto the one platform. And then we begin the process of then looking to simplify the products that we acquired through the ANZ transaction or, in fact, MLC. So both of those businesses have multiple systems and technologies as we did. And our job now is to simplify those. Through those simplifications, again, we expect to be able to make sure that the clients are in the most contemporary offer and that they're getting the best fee price point they can get.
So who else is doing this sort of thing? Who are your rivals in this?
Look, it's a changing landscape. So traditionally, the likes of Colonial and BT and AMP have all been in this space. Interestingly, for the likes of Colonial and BT, they've certainly exited the advice space. So I think that they've made the decision that they want to focus on the products and investments and they were less focused on advice. And that's really left ourselves and possibly AMP in the advice arena. So I think in some ways, whilst there's a challenge in advice, there's also a fantastic opportunity. I think the likes of Colonial and BT are obviously looking to extract themselves out of banks, that they've got uncertainty around their ownership structures. So they've got their own unique challenges. So the traditional competitors, I'd say we're really well placed to really help transform advice, help deliver better products to clients. Then there are the new incumbents. And I would see the industry funds, for example, as potentially a source of competition as well, who do a terrific job in servicing people with their superannuation needs.
So you think the industry funds will set up advice bureaus?
They don't do holistic advice today. But that being said, there's nothing stopping them doing that in the future. I think time will tell whether they see advice as a core part of their proposition. I would suggest that advice is quite different to product. So I think it would require a different capability set, but it's certainly possible. I think ultimately, whether it's industry funds or whether it's retail wealth managers, our focus is on making sure we're making ourselves more relevant to our clients.
Now, you, of course, have a product manufacturing business, and I guess that business incorporates the MLC product business as well.
It does now, yes.
Okay. So what changes are you making in that area?
So we were really fortunate and pleased to acquire some of those MLC products, MasterKey and some of the products that support Employer Super. So the starting point is we'll continue to invest in those products, make sure they remain contemporary and they're very, very competitive in terms of price and functionality. Importantly, however, it's really important to make sure that they're also in the most contemporary technology possible. So where we can, we will look to improve the technology and upgrade the technology there, just as we've done on Evolve. So one of the capabilities we have as IOOF is that we have a large number of technology people. So we build our own technology in-house and we'll be looking to see if we can migrate the MLC products across to our technology that's quite modern and I think that'll translate to better outcomes for clients. So the products will continue. We'll look to make them more competitive and we'll look to make sure that they're on the best technology to provide the best experience.
So what percentage of your product business is sold to IOOF group advisors? In other words, how dependent is your product business on your advisor network?
Yeah, not overly, and certainly not as high as others have historically traded. So our business has always had a philosophy of what we call open architecture, which is allowing advisors to use whatever product they need to use to act in the best interest of their clients. So there was never any embedded incentives to use IOOF products, which means that the proportion of IOOF products they have typically used is being lower, quite lower than most other advice businesses. So historically, before the acquisitions, it was probably as low as 30% was IOOF. Now that's changed with the mix of the new advisors coming in. However, our expectation is that there's certainly no incentives to use IOOF. There's no subsidisation, and that they have access to products from all over the market. So it's really, it's entirely up to the advisor to determine what they should be using.
So in terms of your product business, you must have to sell that to rival advisors.
Correct. So we will market to all advisors, the entire marketplace. We call them IFA, so independent financial advisors. We have a large number of them that choose to use our products as a third-party provider. And I think that's great. I think that creates a really vibrant and competitive marketplace, and that's more likely to make sure that the right client is ending up in the right product.
So your product production people has a sales force, I guess.
Correct.
Yep. Goes out there and sells their product to your own advisors, but also to those advisors' rivals.
That's right. So really, we don't distinguish whether they're part of our group or whether they're an external advisor. We treat them in the same vein. They get the same service, they get the same engagement model. We just see them as an advisor who we're trying to market to, and they'll ultimately choose whether they use our products or whether they don't.
Okay. So in terms of profits to IOOF shareholders, when do you think this all sort of comes together and you maximise it? You've made various calculations in the current financial year, and I guess similar things will be done, last financial year, and similar things will happen this financial year. But when does it all come together?
Yeah, look, so over the, and we outlined this in our full year results last week, where over the next 12 months, there are a series of changes that we think will result in quite a lot of synergies from a financial perspective. And quite a lot of efficiencies. Now, I think it's important to note that whilst we're making the changes next year, the full year impact of those changes won't occur until the year after. So we've suggested that we on what we call a run rate basis, so we'll make changes that equate to $80 to $100 million in efficiencies and savings, but the full year impact of that won't be felt until the following year. So it's really, I think, in the what I call the financial year 23 and financial year 24, that you'll see a lot of those benefits really flow through.
Okay. And so that's really when that's your testing time, isn't it? Because we'll then determine whether you've got this right or not.
That's exactly right. That ultimately, I think, whilst we'll get tested along the way, the real rub hits the road when all of this change, all of these improvements and efficiencies, do they in fact translate to bottom line sustainability for the group? And frankly, do they translate to better outcomes to our clients as well?
Okay. Going further down the track, will you buy more businesses, or do you think you'll just grow it organically?
I'd like to say that our dance card's pretty full at the moment, Robert. But we never say never. Look, I think if there were really compelling reasons to acquire again, then we'd consider it. That being said, our focus is on making the most out of the last acquisition and also growing organically. I think there's a real opportunity to just improve our momentum as a business standalone. But at this stage, I wouldn't like to rule anything in or out.
Just finally, I want to return to COVID. We are seeing a huge demand for psychology services. Mm. People are having teenage problems with their children, sometimes themselves. Mm. Are you training your people to handle this? Or how do you – this is something that when you did this model, you wouldn't have anticipated. And surely with your advisors getting into the personal affairs of their clients, this will be coming forward quite a lot. How do they handle it?
It's a great question, and I think it's something that our advisors deal with quite a lot. Now, we haven't looked to train them outside of the realms of the financial well-being. That being said, if you can improve someone's financial well-being, that is a really good way to remove stress from their broader well-being. So there are plenty of examples, even during COVID, where empowering someone and making someone feel in control of their finances removes the general stresses in their general lives. There are other cases where I know many of our advisors will actually, in fact, partner with specialists, be it psychology, be it marriage therapists and family therapists to help them actually connect the dots. So we wouldn't necessarily want our advisors going outside of their realm of expertise. We would encourage them to partner with others. But there is no doubt that financial stresses for a lot of people are one of the main sources of mental distress. So by taking control of your finances, it's one really important way to take control of your life in general.
Are you seeing a greater level of financial stress in this current Delta environment than you did before?
No, not yet. I've got to say, we saw a peak last year, particularly at the early half of the COVID pandemic, and I think a lot of that came about from just the sheer uncertainty of not knowing what came next. I think a credit to the government, many of the supports they've put in place really diffused that. And we haven't seen the same peak of distress. That being said, as you and I have discussed, this is not over yet. So it's still got some months to play out. So we're really watching quite closely to make sure we just keep on top of the well-being of our clients or the broader community at large. One of the things we did last year was we launched a community advice offer, which was pro bono advice for those that maybe couldn't otherwise afford access to financial advice. And that was well received, and it's something that we are considering again potentially if we see the need.
Thank you very much, Ronaldo. Most appreciated. It's fascinating, and I really look forward to seeing how this works out. Because if I hark all the way back to when I was a lot younger, I had a colonial advisor, a life insurance salesman, and he came into the lounge room. He knew all our situations. Yep. In those days, there were high fees, but it was all tax deductible, so you didn't mind paying the fees. And you're right; he became a family friend. And and at the end of the conversation, I think you should take this whole of life, or I should take this policy. And that was various aims, and that's how it worked. It disappeared though. That all disappeared.
It did, and I think we lost sight of what really matters to people, and that is feeling confident in your affairs. And that's really the good advisors. That's still what they do. That is their core primary focus. And their client. And as I said, all the research we've done suggests that the clients really value it and they're prepared to pay for it.
The financial planners used to say, if we charge $3,000 or whatever figure it might be, and people know that's what they're paying, they won't use our services. It looks like that's not so.
No, not at all. Not at all. I think the challenge we have at the moment is more people wanting to engage with advisors and there not being enough advisors in the industry. So that's something that we need to work on as well. Yeah. How do we create the next generation of advisors? Because, there's the increasing education standards, for example, that's resulted in some advisors choosing not to go back to university or not to do further study that's now required. So they're leaving. So it's left a bit of a gap. And I think our goal as an industry is, well, how do we create financial advice as a legitimate career path for those coming out of university today and embark on what is a really noble profession?
And so are you working with universities in this area or what's happening?
We are. We're working with organisations that focus on graduates coming out of university and looking to really create financial advice as a legitimate career path and hopefully create IOOF as an employer of choice to start your career in financial advice.
Yes, well, there's an awful lot of people going out of universities going to social work. Now, it's not the same, but it is related.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you very much. It's been great talking to you. Thank you.